Welcome back to our program. We're going to talk a little politics and a little government with our friend Congressman Andy Barr, who represents the Lexington district here. Andy, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning to you, Larry, and congratulations to De'Aaron, Malik, and Bam. Great picks for those three last night, and especially Bam Adebayo, who folks maybe at the outset of his decision to declare for the NBA draft didn't think he would go as high as he did. What was he, 14th?
Yeah.
I thought that was a real good outcome for Bam Adebayo.
An underrated aspect of John Calipari is the quality of individual he brings into this program. I mean, it's hard to not be just blown away by these kids, especially De'Aaron Fox. You know, I mean, last night, inside of his jacket was embroidery with, the pink ribbon, representing breast cancer, research and the fight against, and that wasn't pretty special. And his friendship that he developed with, the young man, and, I think he had a terminal condition in high school. He was a big Kentucky fan, and when Calipari came to town for an official visit, he asked Coach Cal if he would go by his friend's house to meet this kid who had just a love affair with Kentucky basketball. He's just high quality individual, all three of them really, and for all their basketball talents and their successes on court, they're quality,
absolutely
human
quality
beings
kids
too.
And we wish them well, and Coach does such a great job developing these young men, and not just for professional future on the basketball court, but it really cultivates them as a father figure, and we are so lucky to have John Calipari leading our program, and we're lucky to have these great young men who come through our program. As short as it is, they seem to, even though in this era of one and done, they seem to really connect with the Big Blue Nation and stay connected. And that's a wonderful thing, and it underscores how special the University of Kentucky basketball program continues to be.
No question about it. Congressman, to talk a little business, I know you got some votes this morning. Anything that's going to impact my life? That's why I got to know that right up front.
Well, yeah, I mean, this morning we did vote on an important workforce development legislation, but I just have to say, again, our thoughts and prayers go to my good friend Steve Scalise, the House Majority Whip, who remains in a Washington area hospital recovering from last week's tragic shooting. And I would ask all of the listeners in my congressional district to keep him and his wife Jennifer and their kids in your thoughts and prayers, as in addition to Matt Micah and Zach Barth, who were two staffers and former staffer who were injured during the attack, and David Bailey and Crystal Griner. These are two heroes. Special Agent Bailey and Special Agent Griner were attached to Whip Scalise's security detail and responded to the shooting in a very heroic and courageous way. And if it wasn't for their quick reaction, their training, and their bravery, frankly, it would have been a whole lot worse. Members of Congress, within hours of the shooting, we were briefed by the FBI, by the chief of the Capitol Hill Police, and by the sergeant of arms of the House. And, of course, what we found out during that time, and this was corroborated by the eyewitness accounts of our colleagues who were there during those harrowing 10 minutes, that Special Agent Bailey really saved the day, as did Agent Griner. And even though they were both injured in the process, they distracted the shooter. They prevented the shooter from coming around home base after many members of Congress and staff had jumped into the first base dugout to seek cover. But clearly this was a premeditated, politically motivated assassination attempt, and it would have been a whole lot worse if it wasn't for Special Agent Bailey and Special Agent Griner who took out the shooter.
There's no question. I mean, it's no question it was politically motivated, and it was pre-planned. But the FBI seemed to come out with an inexplicable statement that they don't know what the motive was, and it was random. And I don't know how they can come to that conclusion.
Well, I mean, that's absurd. I mean, everybody knows what this was. This was a guy who had harassed my colleagues in the Congress and targeted Republican lawmakers. He came up to Jeff Duncan, congressman from South Carolina, came up to Congressman Ron DeSantis immediately before the attack, 5 minutes before the attack. There's no question. I mean, he asked whether these were Republicans or Democrats. He cased the field in advance. He was connected to radical left-wing causes, and he had demonstrated a proclivity to violence toward Republican and conservative members of Congress in the past. My colleague Mike Bost, who is from Southern Illinois, the shooter was a frequent flyer. This was someone who had been, you know, a protester and someone who had been harassing his staff and his office for some time. So there's no doubt what this was, and it is a call to all of us to lower the temperature, to try to promote a greater level of civility. But I will say, and I've said this over the last week or so, it's unfortunate that many Americans get the wrong picture of the political climate in Congress. In fact, many of my colleagues and friends in the Congress are not just Republicans, but they're Democrats. We work with one another. I'm a member of a bipartisan breakfast group. We meet every week. We were together last night, many of my Democratic colleagues at the White House, at the White House picnic. We worked together across the aisle. You would never know it. And you wouldn't know it because, frankly, the media doesn't report the facts. The media in this country is driven by a 24-hour news cycle. They not only sow the seeds of division by amplifying the most extreme voices, by only reporting on scandal, only reporting on division, only on reporting partisanship. They also fail and omit to report on all of the bipartisan work, all of the work that we do across the aisle every single day. And, you know, we all have a responsibility here. Obviously, there's no one who is responsible for this tragic shooting other than the evil shooter himself. But having said that, we all have a responsibility, including the mainstream media, to stop dividing the country, to start reporting the actual truth, which is that members of Congress, ordinarily, on a day-to-day basis, we do work together. You know, I don't know if anybody covered, for example, if the news media, certainly our local newspaper does not cover any of this. But if, you know, yesterday there was a fantastic display of unity and bipartisanship on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives when the Republican team captain of the baseball team, the Democratic team captain of the baseball team, you know, talked to each other in a colloquy, supporting each other, supporting Steve Scalise and his recovery. You know, the Democrats dedicated their victory and their trophy to Steve. And, you know, as Speaker of the House Paul Ryan said, an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. And that's the kind of collegiality, that's the kind of civility that is actually routine in the Congress, and yet the media doesn't want that to be the story. I assume they think that their circulation or their ratings would be better if they promoted an us versus them mentality in the country, and that's unfortunate.
Let's talk about a topic that I think we would all like to see some level of bipartisanship, and that's the healthcare issue. I know you guys passed a bill, and the Senate just proposed a bill that I think Senator McConnell is hoping that will be voted on at some point next week. Do you see the end result of having some legislation that both sides are comfortable with and both sides can support, or do you think that it'll have to be along party lines to get this thing passed?
Well, you know, a good example of where the press simply will not report on bipartisan work on healthcare reform. Healthcare reform, to be sure, over the last several years especially, has been a contentious issue that has divided the parties, no doubt about it. But there are areas of overlapping interest where the parties have come together and worked together. And yet the American people don't hear about it because the press deliberately refuses to report the fact that Republicans and Democrats came together in the end of last year. The Republican majority in the Congress, the Democratic president, the outgoing president, President Obama, we passed the 21st Century Cures Act and President Obama signed it into law. This was a big bipartisan win, landmark legislation that will help promote the discovery and research into cures for diseases. so often when we talk about healthcare reform, we're talking about insurance, we're talking about payment systems, we're talking about Medicaid, and not enough attention is given to actual, to real healthcare reform, which relates to curing diseases and treatments for the thousands of diseases for which we don't have good treatments. And I think that's a big, big part of healthcare reform. We made a big step forward in that in a bipartisan way at the end of the last year. But on the Obamacare repeal and replace effort, you know, I would hope that we could come together on this issue, because I get it. Health is a life or death issue. And all of us, Republicans and Democrats, have loved ones or who they themselves have faced a chronic health condition at some point or another in their life. And what we're trying to do here is recognize, and I think there should be a bipartisan recognition, that as well-intentioned as it was in the reform efforts several years ago with Obamacare, the law has failed. The law is hurting people. The law the law is driving up costs, and that's not an ideological statement. It's just a fact that premiums continue to skyrocket, that deductibles continue to increase, and it's also a fact that choices are going away. And so, for any of my constituents or Americans around the country who view Obamacare in a positive way, you cannot deny that there remain significant problems with our healthcare system, particularly when it comes to cost, and particularly when it comes to this law that has taken away choices from the American people, taken away choices of health plans, taken away choices of doctors and specialists. And it's important to remember that when people talk about increased coverage, and it may be true that in some cases people have gained coverage when they didn't have it before, but what the sad irony is that as people gain coverage, what they've come to discover is that access to coverage, nominal coverage, access to a Medicaid card, is not always access to meaningful health care. It's more like access to a waiting line. It may be access to some kind of gatekeeper, but it doesn't, the cruel irony is it doesn't give you access to the specialist who can actually treat that pre-existing condition. So we know we have to do better than this, and we've offered an alternative. We want the input of the American people in the Senate to, if they've got better ideas, to improve on that alternative. But the bottom line is we need to be focused on medical miracles. We need to be focused on innovation and cures. But we also need to be focused on fixing this broken law so that we can actually lower costs for people and make sure that we preserve choices so that people don't have just one government-mandated choice.
Congressman, I got a question from Jim on our Scheller Automotive text line. He says, why can't Obamacare be completely repealed with an effective end date of like 12/31, and then a new plan worked on it that would be effective beginning the next day? Why can't it be completely repealed altogether with an end date, and then something in place to replace it the next day?
Well, it's a good question. If you recall, look at the history of how Obamacare was actually enacted. The first phase of Obamacare's enactment was done where the Democrats had 60 votes in the Senate. And so they had total control, unlike Republicans have control now. And, of course, there's a rule in the Senate that requires 60 votes to get most things done. And so Obamacare was implemented with 60 Democrat votes. And then, if you remember, Ted Kennedy passed away, and Scott Brown came in, who was a Republican, and they had to finish the work of Obamacare through the reconciliation process, bypassing this 60-vote requirement. That's all technical, and it's procedural, and it's probably not what the American people really care about. But the point is that Republicans don't have the votes in the Senate to completely repeal the law, and that's why. Because there is no Democrat support for full repeal. And so that's why we're using the reconciliation procedure, which is a long word that just basically means that the Senate can pass the bill with only 51 votes as opposed to 60 votes. And the what is eligible for reconciliation is not full repeal. There's only certain kinds of reforms that affect the budget that are eligible for reconciliation, and therefore they're just not the votes in the Senate for full repeal. Now, in the House, I voted many, many times for full repeal, and we are capable of doing that because we operate on a simple majority rule. But that's not the case under Senate rules, and that's why we're using this reconciliation procedure to do as much as we can to provide relief to the American people and then pass other bills in a second phase and then a third phase that are 60-vote bills in the Senate, and put those bills over in the Senate and see what we can do to get even more relief to the American people.
Congressman, we're out of time. I appreciate it as always. Thanks so much. Always enjoy talking with you.